I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network. Our guest this hour has selected the very best things that have ever been said on 250 topics of deep human interest. And those topics include ability, absence, cats and dogs, change, character, family, forgiveness, individualism, motivation, music, nature, risk-taking. Oh, there are many of them. Wishing and wishes, wit and humor, words, and of course there are many, many others. Our guest has been here before. His latest book is Metaphors, M-E-T-A-P-H-O-R-S, Be With You, an A to Z Dictionary of History's Greatest Metaphorical Questions. Dr. Marty Grothy is with us, and he became interested in this topic when he was in college. He'll tell us that story early on. He is a retired psychologist, a management consultant, and a platform speaker, and is the author of 6 word and language books, including Ifforisms, an anthology of aphorisms that begin with the word if, Neverisms, a quotation lover's guide to things you should never do, never say, or never forget, and then, of course, most recently, the book that we'll be talking about this hour. We'll be welcoming phone calls. It's a nice book to have because if you're writing speeches or if you just want to think about certain important things in life, and all of these are important areas of our lives and what people have said that are worth remembering about love and death and middle age and dogs and all of that, it's a nice book to just read through. We'll be welcoming phone calls for him. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655, email talk at WPR.org, Facebook is The Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're on Twitter, and that's at K Dunn Show. Dr. Marty Grothy, thanks very much for being with us again. Hi.
Hi, Kathleen. It's so nice to be with you again.
Yeah, nice to have you here. So tell us the story when you were in college, and I think this is true. Thoreau was big when I was in college and in high school as well. You came across this Thoreau quote, and literally, if you hadn't, your life might have been very different, right?
Well, yeah, we'll get to that exact quote in a second. But, you know, Henry David Thoreau once said that many a man has dated a whole era of his life to the reading of a single book.
Mm.
And, you know, many of your listeners will testify to the importance of that. Single books do have sometimes the capacity just to transform the way we look at things and, in fact, our whole lives. And for me, of course, that book was Walden, a book that has probably transformed the lives of thousands of people around the world over the years.
Mm-hmm. You also find yourself keeping track of quotations and putting them on little cards and then putting them on a bulletin board in your college dorm, I believe.
Well, when I was in college, I went through what we now call it an identity crisis, but that term had not been invented when I went through my own. And a college counselor that I saw suggested that I read Thoreau. In fact, he recommended it in the most interesting way. He said, Henry David Thoreau wrote a book, and I think he was thinking about somebody in your situation when he wrote it. And that was such an interesting way to recommend a book. And, of course, it piqued my interest, and I started reading it. And you know, Walden is it's not an easy read, but about every 5 or 6 pages, these little gems just come out and kind of slap you on the face and say, pay attention to me. And that happened to me kind of throughout the reading of the book, but I got to the concluding chapter, and I came across what most people now regard as Thoreau's most famous quotation. But when I read it, it was the first time I'd ever seen it, and I thought he was speaking to me. And, of course, that quotation is, if a man does not keep pace with his companions, perhaps it is because he hears a different drummer. Let him step to the music which he hears, however measured and far away. And that captured my situation at the time so perfectly that I just immediately wrote it down on a 3x5-inch Oxford index card, you know, those little 3x5 cards we used to do our library research in. And I pasted it up on my bulletin board, and I went back and I kind of reread the entire book and copied out another 10 or 15 quotes from Walden, and this was in 1963, so I've been collecting quotations avidly ever since.
Mm-hmm. And you ask in the intro to your book, what if he had expressed Thoreau his ideas literally? Certain individuals are different from most other people, and it's good that this is the way things are. You likely would not have remembered that, would you?
Well, you know, I had a little bit of a brainstorm when I was writing this latest book, and the brainstorm was, what if we lived in a world without metaphor?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, of course, the Thoreau quote that I just read to you is an example of a metaphorical observation. We can explore the topic of metaphor a little bit later if you'd like, but, you know, I thought, gee, if we took metaphor out of our lives, what would it be like? And you know, the analogy here is we take lots of things for granted. We don't even think about electricity when we turn on the light switch. But of course, if there's a electricity outage, you know, we become keenly aware of how dependent we are on it. And so I basically outlined this little thought experiment in which I said, you know, what if there was a metaphor outage and we couldn't express ourselves that way? And, gee, the more I thought about it, and I explore this a little bit in the first chapter, I'll probably be writing an article about it for some other publication very soon, but life, we couldn't even say things like life would be barren in a world without metaphor, because we can't apply words like barren to life without speaking metaphorically.
Exactly. Now, this was no small task to put together all of these quotations. I'm thinking about just the process of deciding what you were going to, all the different categories, the 250 categories, because heavens knows, I can't even imagine how many categories there are in life. There must be millions of them.
Well, as you know, this is now my seventh quotation book. And you know, as we kind of move through various kinds of quotation books, I've explored other figures of speech in some of them, and the topic of repartee in another one. But when I got to this one, you know, I wanted to do something a little bit different. And so I actually had a dream that inspired the idea. I was in this dream I had, I was walking down, I went to graduate school in New York City, so the dream was in the Upper West Side, and I was walking down the street, and over there, into my vision came a museum of quotations. And I looked at that sign and I said, a museum of quotations? I've never seen anything like that before. And I walked closer and I saw this sandwich board that had a picture of the curator of the museum. And as I read the description of the curator, I felt this tinge of jealousy, because I thought to myself, I could have done this. And then I walked into the front door of the museum and I was taken directly to what was called the Courage Collection. And in this room, there were probably 15 or 20, I guess you'd have to call them works of art on the wall, but they were all quotations. And, you know, they were illuminated from above in the way in which we illuminate great works of art. And in front of some of these various quotations were patrons discussing the meaning of the quotation and how beautiful it was. And then as I'm about to go to another gallery of quotations, I woke up. And when I woke up, I thought to myself, wow, I can do a book that's like a museum of quotations.
Right.
And so that's the inspiration for this particular book. And in my particular case here, I no longer thought of myself as a quotation anthologist. I began to think of myself as a quotation curator. And so, like all curators, I felt that it was my job to find the absolute best things that were ever said on, and in this case it turned out to be 250 topics of deep and enduring human interest, and you ticked off a bunch of them at the very beginning of the show. But, you know, I could have done 500 topics, but of course the book would have, you know, gone on forever. As it is, it's over 500 pages, so I had to stop somewhere. But when you do the single best thing ever said on 250 topics, that of course means you've got a book of 2,500 quotations. And I just went back over the whole course of my life, and then for the last 3 years before this book was published, I have never worked harder on a project. And I told my editor, as we were nearing completion, I sat down one day and I just did a kind of a gross arithmetic on how many quotations did I, you know, carefully examine in selecting these 2,500, and the number I came up with was that I examined about 5 million quotations.
Ooh-wee.
To get to these.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, that's a lot of quotations to look at.
That is a whole lot of quotations to look at. And you say that a lot of them, I mean, they're from people who we don't know. They're obviously from Shakespeare. Is there? There are a lot of people we know about, some famous authors. But you say in the intro that you were perhaps surprised how many of these go back to Greek and Roman times.
Oh, my goodness. When the man who introduced the world to the topic of metaphor was Aristotle, and he wrote a book called Poetics in the 5th century B.C., and in his book, he was celebrating what he called masters of metaphor, and the masters of metaphor that he was honoring in the 5th century B.C. were people like Homer, who was writing in the 8th century B.C., So the fact is that this capacity to think metaphorically is a unique capacity of human beings. It goes back to the very earliest ages of humankind, and metaphor is very special because whenever we try to explain one thing that is hard to explain, human beings have discovered, well, the way to handle this is let's relate it to something else that people do understand. So the essence of metaphorical language is to explore or understand or explain one thing by relating it to something else. And people have been doing that, people have been doing that probably since about maybe 1500 or 1400 B.C.
Wow.
Homer, of course, was writing in 800 B.C., but, you know, this tendency to engage in metaphorical thinking goes way back. There was a Roman writer named Aristophanes who put it rather nicely when he said, by words, the mind is winged.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a lovely metaphorical observation in its own right, but the basic notion here is that we can really take off and soar when words are expressed beautifully.
Yes, we can. We're going to welcome phone calls for you, and we'll hear some of the wonderful metaphors that are in the book. The book is Metaphors Be With You, an A to Z Dictionary of History's Greatest Metaphorical Quotations. Dr. Marty Grothy is our guest, and our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Email is talk@wpr.org, Facebook, The Kathleen Dunn Show, Twitter at K Dunn Show. The book is a compilation of the 10 best things ever said on 250 topics of deep and enduring human interest. Ideas like love and politics to tact and jazz. And it's for people who love language, and that means, of course, many of you. I'm going to just read a few of these as we go in and out of our pauses here on the show. And, of course, Dr. Grothy can do the same. Integrity by Thomas Paine. Interesting guy, Thomas Paine. It's necessary to the happiness of man that he be mentally faithful to himself. Saul Bellow, Mistakes. You can spend the entire second half of your life recovering from the mistakes of the first half. This is the Ideas Network. Let's welcome phone calls for our guest, and we start with Mark in Delavan. Hi, Mark.
Hi, how are you?
Fine, how are you, Mark?
Hi, Mark.
Pretty good. Hey, what I wanted to ask your guest was if he was aware of there's an episode of Star Trek, The Next Generation, and they're meeting this other species who are spacebound for the first time. No one has ever been able to figure out what they're talking about. And so at some point, the Captain Picard, the captain of this alien species planet, are beamed down to the planet, and they have to work together to keep from being killed by this monster. And the only way for that to happen is to learn how to communicate. And it turns out that this other race communicates entirely on metaphors from their own historical culture.
Ah.
And so he has to figure that out, and what it is the guy's saying, and so what does that mean about defending themselves from the monster? And I had bought a copy of it because I had hoped to use it to teach metaphor to a high school English class.
Oh, that sounds great. You'll have to get your hands on a copy of that if you can, Dr. Grothy.
Well, Mark, you'll think less of me for saying this, but I've never been a huge Star Trek fan, but you know that may change as a result of this phone call.
Right, exactly.
And I also want to just ask Mark, if I give him and your listeners my email address, can they send these things to me?
Sure, why not? Go ahead.
Okay, it's Dr. M. Grothy at AOL.com, so it's spelled DrMGrothe at AOL.com, or my website is drmardy.com, that's drmardy.com. I would love to learn more about that one, Mark, and of course, if anybody else is motivated to send something along, I'd be happy to receive that as well.
You got it.
Thank you. Thanks for the call. So do you use these quotations when you're in a certain kind of mood or you're thinking about, I don't know what the topic might be. It might be you're getting a dog or you're having a baby or you've approached middle age. Do you go through these at certain times in your life, Dr. Rothy, to help put everything in perspective?
Well, first of all, Kathleen, call me Marty.
Okay, Marty.
And secondly, you know, I cannot have an experience in life without thinking of a quotation or two or three. I did a book signing at my local independent bookstore here in Southern Pines, North Carolina, the other day, and I'd been looking forward to it for some time, but I knew I was going to be a little bit unhappy because the proprietor of the bookstore just had a new baby, and so she wasn't expected to be there. And wouldn't you know, she shows up with her new baby strapped closely to her breast, and she introduces me. And, of course, I was thrilled to see her there. But the first thing that came out of my mouth is, I said to the people who were attending the book signing, you know, I can't have an experience without thinking of metaphorical quotations. And all
sure.
of a sudden, I'm thinking about babies now. And three quotes came immediately to mind. Carl Sandburg said, a baby is God's opinion that the world should go on.
Love that one.
And Ronald Knox, a famous English writer, defined a baby as a loud noise at one end and no sense of responsibility at the other. And then the third quote that came to mind was not exactly about babies, but it was the quote that the audience really liked the best, because most of us have brought babies into the world and then they've grown up to be children. And Neil Postman, the famous American educator, once said, children are the living messages to a future we will not see.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is a long-winded answer to your question. Do I use these or think of these? I can't get these out of my mind, Kathleen.
Well, then it's good you're writing books about them, because I don't know what else you'd do, Marty.
I guess.
Yeah.
I tell people, don't put drinks into me at a party because I can get a little carried away.
But I'll bet they call you when they're writing a speech, right?
I have helped a lot of people who are struggling just to find the perfect quote.
I'm sure.
When they were giving a speech. And sometimes this can be very, very memorable. I've got a weekly newsletter that I send to about 10,000 subscribers around the world. And, you know, most of them I've never met and I don't know, of course. But about a month ago, I got an email from a subscriber who, a young woman who just became the CEO of a company that she inherited for her father. She inherited from her father, and her father was now ailing. And about 2 or 3 months into her new tenure as the CEO of this company, a 35-year tenured employee of the firm died unexpectedly. And she was asked to come and say a few words at the memorial service. And she said, I've been just spending so much time, hesitating what to say and how to say it. And so, I immediately, of course, took that as a challenge for myself. And, I found her the perfect quote and she used it. And when she, wrote me back a couple days later, it was perfect. And I do know the quote, if you want to hear it.
Yes, please, of course.
Well, this is a quote from an English writer named Julie Burchill. And here it is exactly. Tears are sometimes an inappropriate response to death. When a life has been lived completely honestly, completely successfully, or just completely, the correct response to death's perfect punctuation mark is a smile.
Mm-hmm.
And the family actually put that quotation on the Facebook page of their departed father after the funeral was over. So, you know, sometimes when we're searching for the perfect word, as luck would have it, somebody provided the perfect word 2 years ago or 2 centuries ago, and they've said it in ways that are absolutely unforgettable.
Oh, I like that one. Thank you, Mark, very much for your call. We go next to Gerard in Sturgeon Bay. Hi.
Hello.
Hi.
Thanks for taking my call. And I, as a former teacher, I did a unit on colorful language, idiom, metaphor, simile, etc. And I titled that "I Never Met a Four I Didn't Like."
Perfect.
That's
that was the title. That was the title of my first metaphor book.
Oh, is this?
Oh, wonderful. Absolutely. Yeah. No, I didn't invent that. I mean, we borrow these wonderful sayings that come from other people. But yeah, this new book is called "Metaphors Be With You." My first book was called "I Never Met a Four I Didn't Like," and you know, I've taken probably the two best quotations ever. Metaphor, and I've been able to put them into titles of my books.
Very nice.
Thanks very much, Gerard.
Thank you.
Since Gerard's on the line and he's described himself as a teacher, I talked to 25 teachers at a local day school yesterday, and I love talking to teachers because my whole life has been completely assisted by teachers, but there's lots and lots and lots of great quotes on teachers. I've got a section of the 10 best in the book, but I think my favorite one on teachers was from the American female writer Gail Godwin, who said, "Good teaching is 3/4 preparation and 1/4 theater."
Mm-hmm.
And you know, when you go back to think about all of the really great, great, great teachers you had, it kind of captures what they did.
And I like the one that starts that. A teacher affects eternity. He can never tell where his influence stops. That's very true.
Oh, it's a beautiful observation.
Yeah, it is. Steve writes, "Love this topic. I've always thought this quote sums up quotes in general. If I have seen farther, it's by standing on the shoulders of giants," as Isaac Newton. That's a good one, too.
Isaac Newton, one of the most wonderful observations ever authored in the whole course of history. And what a nice way to talk about the gratitude we feel and the tribute we wish to pay to the people that have helped us along the way.
Absolutely. So how much Shakespeare is in the book, Marty?
I think if I remember from the author index at the back, there may be about 120 Shakespeare quotes.
Mm-hmm. He was pretty good, wasn't he?
Well, he was just remarkable.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, in fact, when you look at the dictionary, if you look at the American Heritage Dictionary definition of metaphor, I have it right in front of me. It says, a figure of speech in which a word or phrase that ordinarily designates one thing is used to designate another. And then it says, as in a sea of troubles or all the world's a stage.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, both of those metaphors come from Shakespeare plays. We can explore them further if you'd like, or we can go any other direction you want to.
Mm-hmm. And you, I've just looked and I've read all of the quotations, but I really have always loved the one is, if music be the food of love, play on.
Oh, isn't
that's
that nice?
Wonderful.
You know, I've got a whole wonderful section of quotations on the subject of music, and one of the things that that fascinates me so much is how many quotations are in error when you go to the average quotation collection or internet site.
Really?
Oh, I mean, I would guess if you went up to the 10 most popular quotation sites on the internet, maybe one-fourth to one-third of the quotations are wrong in some way. And I've been guilty of perpetuating some of those errors. In my first book on metaphor, I offered this quote, art washes away from the soul the dust of everyday life, Pablo Picasso.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I always thought that was like the most wonderful quote on art that you could possibly make, you know, that it washes away the dust of everyday life. Well, turns out that quotation is wrong.
Oh.
And I discovered that when I was writing this book. And in fact, the quotation is really not about art. It's about music.
Oh.
I know it. And it comes from a German composer named Bertolt Auerbach. And he said, music washes away from the soul the dust of everyday life. And so I was so happy when I was putting together this new book. And of course, I selected that Auerbach quote as one of the 10 best things ever said on the subject of music. But I was so happy that I was able to put in a footnote at the bottom indicating that most people think the quote begins with the word art, not music, and that's wrong. And I made that same mistake myself a few years ago.
So how do you check for authenticity, Marty?
Kathleen, this is all I do, okay? I mean, I'm working on this day and night, and not that I'm working on this. The historian Arnold Toynbee once said, the supreme accomplishment of life is to blur the distinction between work and play.
Mm-hmm.
And so some people can do that and have done that, and I'm happy to say that that is certainly true for me. And when I can find a citation for a quotation that is wrong, and I see that everybody else is attributing it to Winston Churchill or Mark Twain or Oscar Wilde, but it really was not something that they said. It was said by either another person or maybe even some anonymous author. And you know, these are often called orphan quotations. They're wonderful things that were said or written many years ago by oftentimes some unknown or little-known person. But in order to give them cachet or credibility, we attribute it to Mark Twain.
Yes.
Or Winston Churchill.
Right. Nothing wrong with those anonymous little people.
I agree.
If they only knew their words were living on. Richard in Madison, hi.
Hi. I appreciate the program greatly. in the definition from the American Heritage Dictionary, your guest referenced a sea of troubles.
Yes.
Now, if I recall in the speech from Hanway, to be or not to be, that is the question.
That's correct.
Whether to take arms against a sea of troubles seems to me a mixed metaphor. Does that bother you?
First of all, I think I would debate the question as to whether or not it's a mixed metaphor. You know, let's just read the whole quote. To be or not to be, that is the question. Whether 'tis nobler in the mind to suffer the slings and arrows of outrageous fortune or to take arms against a sea of troubles and by opposing end them. So it's really not a mixed metaphor. It's a combination punch metaphor. So what he's basically saying there is, should we accept the misfortunes of life and just say, well, that's the way it is, or should we take arms against these troubles? And you know, he didn't say a pond of troubles. He said a sea of troubles. So he was talking about, you know, the importance of taking on this enormous challenge of standing up for ourselves against some of the misfortunes or the disasters of life. But I would not say that qualifies as a mixed metaphor in this particular case. But what do you think?
Well, I'm amazed at your response. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
All right, you've done your homework, Marty. Christopher in Green Bay writes, one of my favorite quotes is about metaphors. To convey ideas with works is like trying to build trees out of lumber. I don't know who said it, but it reminds me to be humble about what I think I know and what I think I am communicating.
Oh, isn't that wonderful? Mm-hmm. This is a message to him. Send that quotation along to me. I don't believe I have it in my collection, and I would like to add it. And just go up to drmarty.com, and you'll find all the ways in which you can get a hold of me there.
Great. And it's Mardy, we should tell
people. That's correct.
Great. Gary in Duluth is next. Hello, Gary.
Afternoon.
Afternoon to you, sir.
I get a magazine called The Sun. At the end of every issue, they have a page called Sunbeams,
yes,
which is full of quotes and usually some really good ones. And they take one topic a month for that page.
Oh.
And a couple of my favorite quotes, one is an AA saying that is, not keeping secrets is the same as telling the truth. And the other one is an old Chinese proverb that goes, people do not need other people, but people do need friends.
Well, you know, I have read at least 100 issues of The Sun over the years. I've never been a subscriber, but I've picked up copies whenever I've been able to. And you're right. Those sunbeams at the end of the magazine are priceless.
Thank you very much, Gary, for your call. Scott in Michigan. Hi.
Hi, how are you?
Fine, how are you?
I'm good. But,
good.
I've been wondering about something I said since I first started cooking. I said, cooking as an art form is a medium rarely well done. And I wonder if you've heard that and where you could attribute it to.
Well, the whole notion of a rare medium well done actually goes back to, I believe, Robert Benchley. And if it wasn't Robert Benchley, it was clearly a member of that group of wits in New York that belonged to what was known as the Algonquin Round Table.
Yes.
And so I know that that particular quotation shows up in my Oxymoronica book, which I came out with about 8 or 10 years ago. And the whole notion of a rare medium well done was often used to go on to describe television.
Hmm. And speaking of television, I love this. Let's talk about laughter for a bit. I think about this every now and then. Isn't it strange that we laugh? Thank goodness we laugh. But I wonder what the first person on Earth found funny. I'd love to know the answer to that. But I love the quotes. And I like this one about Steve Allen. Without laughter, life on our planet would be intolerable. So important is laughter to us that humanity highly rewards members of one of the most unusual professions on Earth, those who make a living by inducing laughter in others. I never thought of it that way.
Oh, indeed, yeah. And we should mention, Kathleen, before we get too much further into the program here, that the book that we're talking about has 250 topics, but it also has 250 other things that I think your listeners might be interested in learning about. And, for example, at the top of the courage section or the laughter section or the wit section or the love section is a little code called a QR code. And if the readers of the book are reading a particular section and they are thinking, gee, I wonder what particular play that Shakespeare quote came from, or if they're reading over my 10 selections and saying, well, gee, my favorite quote on that subject is not represented here, all they have to do is click on that QR code with a cell phone, and they will be taken automatically to that particular section of my dictionary of online metaphorical quotations, which has about 30,000 metaphorical quotations, all authenticated and sourced, and so it's a kind of a quotation lover's paradise in many ways, but it serves as a sort of a backup to the book. There's never been a project quite like this in publishing history, where the book is something that one can enjoy, strictly on its own, but it provides an immediate, seamless access to Dr. Marty's Dictionary of Metaphorical Quotations, my online database. And that's up on my website, drmarty.com. But all listeners have to do is just in the search engine put in the words DM, DMQ, Dr. Marty's Dictionary of Metaphorical Quotations, and the DM, DMQ acronym will take them directly to one of the pages of that online database.
Mm-hmm. Great. And we're welcoming phone calls. Dr. Marty Grothy is our guest. His latest book is Metaphors Be With You, an A to Z Dictionary of History's Greatest Metaphorical Quotations. We have a couple lines open for you. Roberta in Madison is next. Hi, Roberta.
Hi there. I don't know if this quote is actually an Abraham Lincoln quote, but I think I learned it so many years ago, I don't remember. It goes, a smile is a curved line that sets many things straight.
Well, Roberta, I will tell you one thing for sure. It's a beautiful quotation. And secondly, Abraham Lincoln never said anything even close to it.
Do you know?
But, this is what we do. We think that's such a great line. Let's attribute it to somebody famous.
Well, I kind of live by it, so I don't know who said it.
It's a wonderful quote to live by. Huh? And in fact, I'm not even 100% certain about this, but I may have that quotation up on my online database. So do check up there. And I have a feeling that you will discover that it's probably authored by that person called Author Unknown.
Good old Anonymous, huh?
Yeah. Well, thanks for taking my call.
Thanks, Roberta.
Thanks for bringing us that wonderful quote.
Yeah, thank you so much. Jenny on Facebook writes, one of my favorite quotes is, envy is ignorance, imitation is suicide. Not really a metaphor, she says, but as an artist, it resonates.
Well, first of all, imitation is suicide is a powerful metaphor, so let's make sure that we honor that as a beautiful metaphorical quotation as well as a profound thought.
Mm-hmm. It is profound. More phone calls momentarily. Metaphors be with you this hour with Dr. Marty Grothy. 800-486-8655 is the number. This is the Ideas Network. And as we call ourselves the Ideas Network, I was looking in Marty's book at ideas, and there are, of course, 10 of the best thoughts about ideas. And so I thought I would read one of them. Which one should I read? Every now and then, a man's mind is stretched by a new idea or sensation and never shrinks back to its former dimensions. That's a good one. Oliver Wendell Holmes. I like that one, Marty.
Oh, that's a great one. I don't know if you got to the Victor Hugo quote there.
Yes, I do. Go ahead, read
it. Okay. Well, you go ahead and read it, and then I'll say something about it.
One can resist the invasion of armies. One cannot resist the invasion of ideas.
It's a beautiful observation by Victor Hugo, and that quotation is presented mistakenly on hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of websites under the phrasing, "There is nothing more powerful than an idea whose time has come."
Yes.
And, you know, Hugo never said anything even close to that. But about 80 years ago, there was a little article in the Atlanta Constitution or the Atlanta Journal. I can't remember the exact newspaper, but it was down in Georgia. And they attributed this other phrasing to Victor Hugo. And it's a beautiful line. But there's nothing in Hugo's original French version of the thought that would warrant that translation. But almost everybody thinks that that's the quotation that Hugo authored, and I was quite happy in my footnote on that page to indicate that that's really not an accurate version of what he said, and what you read is really what he meant to say.
Hmm. Fascinating. Ed in Wausau, hi.
Hi, Kathleen. Thanks for taking my call, and appreciate your show.
Thanks.
I just had two things that I was going to add to the conversation, I guess, was Thoreau's quote from Walden saying, "The mass of men lead lives of quiet desperation," and I think maybe that came out in this last presidential election. And the other item was that Cheers, the TV show, on a totally different note, Norm Peterson had some wonderful quotes, and of course they'd ask him how you doing, Norm, and he'd say things like, "Well, it's a dog eat dog world, and I'm wearing milk bone underwear." the other one was something about the world treating you okay. Oh yeah, sure, just like a baby treats a diaper.
You know, I don't have any Norm Peterson quotes on my online database, but I may have to add some.
Absolutely. Those are good.
Very good.
Thank you. Thanks, Ed.
Yeah. Thanks.
Thanks. Bye. Bye. Deborah in Brown Deer. Hi.
Oh, I didn't know I was going to be on the air, but I just Googled famous quotes, and there's a lot of good ones. But here's Abraham Lincoln. "We can complain because rose bushes have thorns, or rejoice because thorn bushes have roses."
Well, another wonderful quotation, but I'm afraid Abraham Lincoln did not say it. I happen to know that the actual correct author of that quotation was the French writer Alphonse Carr. And you know, Alphonse Carr is also the guy that gave us that wonderful quote about... I'm blanking on this wonderful quote, but that's not a Lincoln quote. And so this happens all the time, and I just say with quotation lovers, beware when you just go on the average website and always just check a little bit further, and usually the old saying, if it sounds too good to be true, it probably is.
Hmm. Well, and that's hard to track down, too, because I'm sure so many things are repeated so many times that it's as though it becomes truth when it's not.
Well, see, and this is, of course, the big problem with the Internet. I mean, back, right, you know, 50 years ago when somebody made a mistake, you know, maybe two or three or four people would copy and replicate that mistake. Now, if you send out an inaccurate tweet, that thing could get replicated, 10,000 times in the next 24 hours.
Right. Deborah, thanks for your call. Randy in Madison, hi.
Hey, how are you guys?
All right, Randy.
Great.
I was wondering if you had an opportunity to review any of the quotes from Far East. Especially the Indian culture has a lot of great poets and saints that have said a lot of wonderful things. Today happens to be the 350th birthday of Guru Gobind Singh, the spiritual leader of the Sikhs. And he said, having failed all modes of redressal, lifting of sword is both just and a religious duty, which is you know, very relevant for the times that we live in today.
Indeed.
I was just wondering if you had an opportunity to look at anybody from the Southeast Asia.
Oh, indeed. First of all, when you just go completely to Asia, my online database will have many quotations from Confucius and Lao Tzu and others, but I think one of my favorite authors from that part of the world is an Indian writer named Rabindranath Tagore. I don't know if you're familiar with him, but I try my best to go beyond just America and Europe to find quotations that are worthy of being honored. And, of course, you can help me on this because when you send me quotations that I would have probably have never discovered on my own, it you know, you kind of become my own little research assistant that I can use to help give some publicity to quotations that might not normally be discovered by people.
Thanks, Randy, so much for your call. Willem in Colfax, hi.
Hi. I have a quote from Will Rogers that I also think is kind of topical. A king can stand people fighting, but he can't last long if people start thinking.
Mm. Ah, yes. I believe that's an accurate Will Rogers quote, and he was picking up on a famous observation from Napoleon. Who many of the emperors in the 17th and 18th centuries felt that one of the worst things that could happen to their nations would be when the servants of their countries began to really start thinking for themselves rather than just accepting, you know, what their royalty said they should believe.
Napoleon's in the book, too, isn't he? I can't remember what the quote was, but...
Well, Napoleon has authored probably my favorite quotation on the subject of leadership when he said, a leader is a dealer in hope.
That's it.
I mean, it's just... it just captures in a very, very, very few words, you know, why some people just seem to rise up in the eyes of so many millions of people. And, you know, we saw that with Mohandas Gandhi, for example, 60, 70 years ago. We certainly saw Martin Luther King Jr. Being a dealer in hope for so many Americans and other, you know, oppressed people around the world. So
yes.
Napoleon was actually a pretty good wordsmith, as it turns out. I have a copy of a book in my library called Napoleon in His Own Words that was written, a couple hundred years ago maybe, or 150 years ago, that's got some real gems.
Hmm. Thanks, Willem. Ed in Waupaca, hi.
Hi. I don't know the origination of this quote, but one of my favorites is, he who conquers himself is the greatest warrior.
You know, I wish I could offer an instant analysis of that one. It's a wonderful quote. But the whole notion that that the greatest battles are the battles that occur inside of ourselves, and the greatest victories are the victories that we achieve over portions of ourselves go way back. I have a section of my online database called Victory Over Self, and I have a feeling we'll find that quotation in that section, but if it isn't in there, I'm going to make sure I add it soon.
Hmm. And one more phone call, almost out of time. Robert in Adams, you're the lucky guy, and maybe we are too, Robert. Hi.
Hi. Really enjoying the program, and had no idea I was a quotation groupie. I just
Well, welcome to the club.
Yeah. And I have so many questions, but I know there's limited time. But I think some of the most self-deprecating self-evaluating quotes are the best. And some people that are close in our own family, we learn them from them.
Mm-hmm. Do you have one? We have only about 10 seconds.
Oh, well, you know, my own father working with the fella that was not really going about a project the right way, but he just bided his time and finally said to him, well, there may be a harder way to do this, but you haven't found it yet.
Perfect.
Thanks, Robert. Marty, thank you so much. Give us the website again for people to send you quotes.
It's www.drmarty, that's drmardy.com.
Thank you, Dr. Marty Grothy. Metaphors be with you. An A to C Dictionary of History's Greatest Metaphorical Quotations is his latest book. Thanks to Scotty Myers for producing the show and Lisa Nalbandian for on-air production.